Interludes. Eshonai. Yim. Risen. I-1. Narak. The rhythm of resolve thrummed softly in the back of Eshonai's mind as she reached the plateau at the center of the shattered plains. The central plateau. Narak. Exile. Home. She ripped the helm of the shard plate from her head, taking a deep breath of cool air. Plate ventilated wonderfully, but even it grew stuffy after extended exertions. Other soldiers landed behind her. She had taken some 1,500 this run. Fortunately, this time they'd arrived well before the humans and had harvested the gem heart with minimal fighting. Devi carried it. He had earned the privilege by being the one to spot the chrysalis from afar. Almost, she wished it had not been so easy a run. Almost. "Where are you, Blackthorn?" she thought, looking westward. "Why have you not come to face me again?" She thought she'd seen him on that run a week or so back, when they'd been forced off the plateau by his son. Eshonai had not participated in that fight. Her wounded leg ached, and the jumping from plateau to plateau had stressed it, even in shard plate. Perhaps she should not be going on these runs in the first place. She'd wanted to be there in case her strike force grew surrounded and needed a shard bearer, even a wounded one, to break them free. Her leg still hurt, but plate cushioned it enough. Soon she would have to return to the fighting. Perhaps if she participated directly, the Blackthorn would appear again. She needed to speak with him. She felt an urgency to do so, blowing upon the winds themselves. Her soldiers raised hands in farewell as they went their separate ways. Many softly sang or hummed a song to the rhythm of mourning. These days, few sang to excitement, or even to resolve. Step by step, storm by storm, depression claimed her people, the listeners, as they called their race. Parshendi was a human term. Eshonai strode toward the ruins that dominated Narak. After so many years, there wasn't much left. Ruins of ruins, one might call them. The works of men and listeners alike did not last long before the might of the high storms. That stone spire ahead, that had probably once been a tower. Over the centuries, it had grown a thick coating of creme from the raging storms. The soft creme had seeped into cracks and filled windows, then slowly hardened. The tower now looked like an enormous stalagmite, rounded point toward the sky, side knobbed with rock that looked as if it had been melted. The spire must have had a strong core to survive the winds so long. Other examples of ancient engineering had not fared so well. Eshonai passed lumps and mounds, remnants of fallen buildings that had slowly been consumed by the shattered plains. The storms were unpredictable. Sometimes huge sections of rock would break free from formations, leaving gouges and jagged edges. Other times, spires would stand for centuries, growing, not shrinking, as the winds both weathered and augmented them. Eshonai had discovered similar ruins in her explorations, such as the one she'd been on when her people had first encountered humans, only 7 years ago, but also an eternity. She had loved those days, exploring a wide world that felt infinite. And now? Now she spent her life trapped on this one plateau. The wilderness called to her, sang that she should gather up what things she could carry and strike out. Unfortunately, that was no longer her destiny. She passed into the shadow of a big lump of rock that she always imagined might have been a city gate. From what little they'd learned from their spies over the years, she knew that the Alethi did not understand. They marched over the uneven surface of the plateaus and saw only natural rock, never knowing that they traversed the bones of a city long dead. Eshonai shivered and attuned the rhythm of the lost. It was a soft beat, yet still violent, with sharp, separated notes. She did not attune it for long. Remembering the fallen was important, but working to protect the living was more so. She attuned Resolve again and entered Narak. Here, the listeners had built the best home they could during the years of war. Rocky shelves had become barracks, carapace from great shelves forming the walls and roofs. Mounds that had once been buildings now grew rock buds for food on their leeward sides. Much of the shattered plains had once been populated, but the largest city had been here at the center. So now the ruins of her people made their home in the ruins of a dead city. They had named it Narak, Exile, for it was where they had come to be separated from their gods. Listeners, both Malin and Femalin, raised hands to her as she passed. So few remained. The humans were relentless in their pursuit of vengeance. She didn't blame them. She turned toward the Hall of Art. It was nearby, and she hadn't put in an appearance there for days. Inside, soldiers did a laughable job of painting. Eshonai strode among them, still wearing her shard plate, helm under her arm. The long building had no roof, allowing in plenty of light to paint by, and the walls were thick with long-hardened creme. Holding thick bristled brushes, the soldiers tried their best to depict the arrangement of rockbud flowers on a pedestal at the center. Eshonai did a round of the artists, looking at their work. Paper was precious and canvas non-existent, so they painted on shell. The paintings were awful. Splotches of garish color, off-center petals. Eshonai paused beside Varanis, one of her lieutenants. He held the brush delicately between armored fingers, a hulking form before an easel. Plates of chitin armor grew from his arms, shoulders, chest, even head. They were matched by her own under her plate. "You are getting better," Eshonai said to him, speaking to the rhythm of praise. He looked to her and hummed softly to skepticism. Eshonai chuckled, resting a hand on his shoulder. "It actually looks like flowers, Varanis. I mean it."
"It looks like muddy water on a brown plateau," he said. "Maybe with some brown leaves floating in it. Why do colors turn brown when they mix? Three beautiful colors put together and they become the least beautiful color. It makes no sense, General."
General. At times, she felt as awkward in the position as these men did trying to paint pictures. She wore war form, as she needed the armor for battle, but she preferred work form. More limber, more rugged. It wasn't that she disliked leading these men, but doing the same thing every day, drills, plateau runs, numbed her mind. She wanted to be seeing new things, going new places. Instead, she joined her people in a long funeral vigil, as one by one they died.
"No, we will find a way out of it."
The art was part of that, she hoped. By her order, each man or woman took a turn in the Hall of Art at their appointed time. And they tried. They tried hard. So far, it had been about as successful as trying to leap a chasm with the other side out of sight.
"No Spren?" she asked.
"Not a one."
He said it to the rhythm of mourning. She heard that rhythm far too often these days.
"Keep trying," she said. "We will not lose this battle for lack of effort."
"But General," Varanis said, "what is the point? Having artists won't save us from the swords of humans."
Nearby, other soldiers turned to hear her answer.
"Artists won't help," she said to the rhythm of peace. "But my sister is confident that she is close to discovering new forms. If we can discover how to create artists, then it might teach her more about the process of change, and that might help her with her research. Help her discover forms stronger even than war form. Artists won't get us out of this, but some other form might.
Varanus nodded. He was a good soldier. Not all of them were. War form did not intrinsically make one more disciplined. Unfortunately, it did hamper one's artistic skill.
Esh and I had tried painting. She couldn't think the right way, couldn't grasp the abstraction needed to create art. War form was a good form, versatile. It didn't impede thought like mate form did. As with work form, you were yourself when you were war form, but each had its quirks. A worker had difficulty committing violence. There was a block in the mind somewhere. That was one of the reasons she liked the form. It forced her to think differently to get around problems. Neither form could create art. Not well, at least. Mate form was better, but came with a whole host of other problems. Keeping those types focused on anything productive was almost impossible. There were two other forms, though the first, dull form, was one they rarely used. It was a relic of the past, before they'd rediscovered something better. That left only nimble form, a general form that was lithe and careful. They used it for nurturing young and doing the kind of work that required more dexterity than brawn. Few could be spared for that form, though it was more skilled at art. The old songs spoke of hundreds of forms. Now they knew of only five. Well, six, if one counted slave form. The form with no spren, no soul, and no song. The form the humans were accustomed to, the ones they called parshmen. It wasn't really a form at all, however, but a lack of any form. Esh and I left the Hall of Art, helm under her arm, leg aching. She passed through the watering square, where Nimbles had crafted a large pool from sculpted creme. It caught rain during the riddens of a storm, thick with nourishment. Here, workers carried buckets to fetch water. Their forms were strong, almost like that of war form, though with thinner fingers and no armor. Many nodded to her, though as a general she had no authority over them. She was their last shard-bearer. A group of three mate forms, two female, one male, played in the water, splashing at one another. Barely clothed, they dripped with what others would be drinking.
"You three," Esh and I snapped at them. "Shouldn't you be doing something?"
Plump and vapid, they grinned at Esh and I.
"Come in," one called. "It's fun."
"Out," Esh and I said, pointing. The three muttered to the rhythm of irritation as they climbed from the water. Nearby, several workers shook their heads as they passed, one singing to praise in appreciation of Esh and I. Workers did not like confrontation. It was an excuse. Just as those who took on mate form used their form as an excuse for their inane activities. When a worker, Esh and I had trained herself to confront when necessary. She'd even been a mate once, and had proven to herself firsthand that one could indeed be productive as a mate, despite distractions. Of course, the rest of her experiences as a mate had been an utter disaster. She spoke to reprimand to the mate forms, her words so passionate that she actually attracted anger spren. She saw them coming from a ways off, drawn by her emotion, moving with an incredible speed, like lightning dancing toward her across the distant stone. The lightning pooled at her feet, turning the stones red. That put the fear of the gods into the mate forms, and they ran off to report to the Hall of Art. Hopefully they wouldn't end up in an alcove along the way, mating. Her stomach churned at the thought. She had never been able to fathom people who wanted to remain in mate form. Most couples, in order to have a child, would enter the form and sequester themselves away for a year, then would be out of the form as soon after the child's birth as possible. After all, who would want to go out in public like that? The humans did it. That had baffled her during those early days, when she'd spent time learning their language, trading with them. Not only did humans not change forms, they were always ready to mate, always distracted by sexual urges. What she wouldn't have given to be able to go among them unnoticed, to adopt their monochrome skin for a year and walk their highways, see their grand cities. Instead, she and the others had ordered the murder of the Alethi king in a desperate gambit to stop the listener gods from returning. Well, that had worked. The Alethi king hadn't been able to put his plan into action, but now her people were slowly being destroyed as a result. She finally reached the rock formation she called home, a small collapsed dome. It reminded her of the ones on the edge of the shattered plains, actually, the enormous ones that the humans called war camps. Her people had lived in those before abandoning them for the security of the shattered plains, with its chasms the humans couldn't jump. Her home was much, much smaller, of course. During the early days of living here, Venli had crafted a roof of great shell carapace and built walls to divide the space into chambers. She'd covered it all over with creme, which had hardened with time, creating something that actually felt like a home instead of a shanty. Eshonai set her helm on a table just inside, but left the rest of her armor on. Shard plate just felt right to her. She liked the sensation of strength. It let her know that something was still reliable in the world, and with the power of shard plate she could mostly ignore the wound to her leg. She ducked through a few rooms, nodding to the people she passed. Venli's associates were scholars, though no one knew the proper form for true scholarship. Nimble form was their makeshift substitute for now. Eshonai found her sister beside the window of the farthest chamber. Demid, Venli's once mate, sat next to her. Venli had held nimble form for 3 years, as long as they'd known of the form. Though in Eshonai's mind's eye, she still saw her sister as a worker, with thicker arms and a stouter torso. That was the past. Now Venli was a slender woman with a thin face, her marbling's delicate swirling patterns of red and white. Nimble form grew long hair strands, with no carapace helm to block them. Venli's, a deep red, flowed down to her waist, where they were tied in 3 places. She wore a robe, drawn tight at the waist and showing a hint of breasts at the chest. This was not mate form, so they were small. Venli and her once mate were close, though their time as mates had produced no children. If they'd gone to the battlefield, they'd have been a war pair. Instead, they were a research pair or something. The things they spent their days doing were very unlistener. That was the point. Eshonai's people could not afford to be what they had been in the past. The days of lounging isolated on these plateaus, singing songs to one another, only occasionally fighting, were over. "So?" Venli asked curiosity. "We won," Eshonai said, leaning back against the wall and folding her arms with a clink of shard plate. "The gem heart is ours. We will continue to eat."
"That is well," Venli said. "And you're human?"
"Dalinar Kolin. He did not come to this battle."
"He will not face you again," Venli said. "You nearly killed him last time."
She said it to the rhythm of amusement as she rose, picking up a piece of paper. They made it from dried rockbud pulp following a harvest, which she handed to her once mate. Looking it over, he nodded and began making notes on his own sheet. That paper required precious time and resources to make, but Venli insisted the reward would be worth the effort. She'd better be right. Venli regarded Eshonai. She had keen eyes, glassy and dark, like those of all listeners. Venli's always seemed to have an extra depth of secret knowledge to them. In the right light, they had a violet cast.
"What would you do, sister?" Venli asked.
If you and this Colin were actually able to stop trying to kill each other long enough to have a conversation.
I'd sue for peace.
We murdered his brother, Venli said. We slaughtered King Gavilar on a night when he'd invited us into his home. That is not something the Alephi will forget or forgive. Eshonai unfolded her arms and flexed a gauntleted hand. That night, a desperate plan made between herself and five others. She had been part of it despite her youth because of her knowledge of the humans. All had voted the same. Kill the man. Kill him and risk destruction. For if he had lived to do what he told them that night, all would have been lost. The others who had made that decision with her were dead now.
I have discovered the secret of Stormform, Venli said.
What? Eshonai stood up straight. You were to be working on a form to help. A form for diplomats, or for scholars.
Those will not save us, Venli said to amusement. If we wish to deal with the humans, we will need the ancient powers.
Venli, Eshonai said, grabbing her sister by the arm. Our gods!
Venli didn't flinch. The humans have surge binders.
Perhaps not. It could have been an honor blade.
You fought him. Was it an honor blade that struck you, wounded your leg, sent you limping?
Her leg ached. We don't know which of the songs are true, Venli said. Though she said it to resolve, she sounded tired, and she drew exhaustion spren. They came with a sound like wind, blowing in through the windows and doors like jets of translucent vapor, before becoming stronger, more visible, and spinning around her head like swirls of steam.
My poor sister. She works herself as hard as the soldiers do. If the surge binders have returned, Venli continued, we must strive for something meaningful, something that can ensure our freedom. The forms of power, Eshonai.
She glanced at Eshonai's hand, still on her arm.
At least sit and listen, and stop looming like a mountain.
Eshonai removed her fingers but did not sit. Her shard plate's weight would break a chair. Instead, she leaned forward, inspecting the table full of papers. Venli had invented the script herself. They'd learned that concept from the humans. Memorizing songs was good, but not perfect, even when you had the rhythms to guide you. Information stored on pages was more practical, especially for research. Eshonai had taught herself the script, but reading was still difficult for her. She did not have much time to practice.
So, storm form, Eshonai said.
Enough people of that form, Venli said, could control a high storm, or even summon one.
I remember the song that speaks of this form, Eshonai said. It was a thing of the gods.
Most of the forms are related to them in some way, Venli said. Can we really trust the accuracy of words first sung so long ago? When those songs were memorized, our people were mostly dull form.
It was a form of low intelligence, low capacity. They used it now to spy on the humans. Once, it and mate form had been the only forms her people had known.
Demid shuffled some of the pages, moving a stack.
Vanley is right, Eshonai. This is a risk we must take.
We could negotiate with the Alephi, Eshonai said.
To what end? Venli said, again to skepticism, her exhaustion spren finally fading, the spren spinning away to search out more fresh sources of emotion.
Eshonai, you keep saying you want to negotiate. I think it is because you are fascinated by humans. You think they'll let you go freely among them? A person they see as having the form of a rebellious slave?
Centuries ago, Demid said. We escaped both our gods and the humans.
Our ancestors left behind civilization, power, and might in order to secure freedom. I would not give that up, Eshonai. Storm form. With it, we can destroy the Alethi army.
With them gone, Venli said, you can return to exploration. No responsibility. You could travel, make your maps, discover places no person has ever seen.
What I want for myself is meaningless, Eshonai said to reprimand, so long as we are all in danger of destruction.
She scanned the specks on the page, scribbles of songs, songs without music, written out as they were, their souls stripped away. Could the listener's salvation really be in something so terrible? Venli and her team had spent 5 years recording all of the songs, learning the nuances from the elderly, capturing them in these pages. Through collaboration, research, and deep thought, they had discovered Nimbleform. It is the only way, Venli said to Peace. We will bring this to the Five, Eshonai. I would have you on our side.
I will consider.